Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is USDA Trade Undersecretary Alexis Taylor, who joins us to discuss the department's export promotion agenda. But first, here's this week's headlines. The clock is ticking on USDA's approach to federal milk marketing order reform petitions. Two petitions submitted by dairy processors last week started a 30-day timeline for USDA's response. The departments can ask for more information, deny the petition, or start a process to consider marketing order changes. But producers and processors are already showing a lack of agreement on the reforms proposed thus far. Producer group leaders say they plan to pursue a more comprehensive approach than the limited scope offered by processors. Farmers are getting more and more concerned about interest rates. The most recent Ag Economy Barometer from Purdue University and the CME Group showed about 25% of respondents say interest rates were among their top concerns. That's up from 14% last summer. 34% pointed to input costs as their top issue. That's down from last summer's peak of 53%. And finally, decision time is approaching for the next steps the U.S. government will take in the genetically modified corn dispute with Mexico. The U.S. Trade Representative requested technical consultations a month ago with Mexico over the country's proposed trade ban, and now could advance to the next stage of a possible dispute settlement process at any time. USDA Trade Undersecretary Alexis Taylor says the matter is important not just for the issue of corn trade, but the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement as a whole.
Obviously, we have concerns about the decree proposed by Mexico and the impact on our bilateral trade. But I think taking a step back, it's broader than that, our concerns. We believe the global trading system and certainly the USMCA is built upon a science-based, transparent regulatory process. These biotechnology events have been studied for decades. They have been proven safe. We have confidence in the safety. So within this agreement, but also within the global trading system, that science-based approach is getting challenged regularly. And so I think it is both within our bilateral trade, our concerns with Mexico, but also the broader context of what is the global trading system built upon.
Mm-hmm. So obviously, I know a lot of this is going to be led by the U.S. Trade Representative, and USDA is kind of in a technical consultations role. But this is a case where the decree is not actually it's not actually in effect, so economic damages can't be proven at this point. The United States and Mexico are disagreeing on a proposal, kind of on a principle here. Is that going to work in the context of a trade dispute like this? Because you can't actually show economic damages on the part of the United States quite yet.
I think it does work. I think the proposal itself is concerning. I think we can highlight that it will impact our trade. And that's why we've entered into these SPS consultations, which is kind of that first step laid out within USMCA, to be able to have that discussion with Mexico, to be able to understand and ask questions from the science-based risk assessment perspective and engage in those dialogues. But I think that is not, in our view, a limiting factor to continuing to engage with Mexico on our concerns about the decree.
Mm-hmm. So AgriPulse reported this week, my colleague Bill Thompson, on a webinar that was held in Mexico, kind of outlining their concerns about glyphosate, about genetically modified corn, and about the health and environmental issues that they see with allowing those products into that country. That's kind of their rationale for this decree. Your thoughts?
Well, I think, you know, we have confidence in what our scientific evidence says about these products. They have been around for decades. They have been highly researched. And by all accounts, they are proven safe. And we have confidence in the safety of these products.
Mm-hmm. So about a month ago, there was the technical consultations process started. Anything in particular you would advise folks following this issue, be it, media, producers, interested industry stakeholders, any particular timelines you would suggest that folks watch as this issue continues to unfold?
We had our technical consultations. We are in internal conversations now and assessing what we heard, if we have additional questions that we want to engage Mexico on, and really what our next steps and what our path forward will be.
We'll have more from Undersecretary Alexis Taylor right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of a space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. A recent trip to Panama leading a trade mission there has USDA Trade Undersecretary Alexis Taylor filling some items on her agenda for the rest of her time as the department's top trade official.
One of the things that I have been prioritizing in my 3 months in this job is really market diversification. Where do we have relationships? Where do we have, in the case of Panama and Central America, free trade agreements to build upon? And how do we ensure our exporters, our farmers and ranchers and agribusinesses, have diverse markets to sell their products into? I think our trade missions are one tool to support that work. We went to Panama. We took 26 U.S. businesses. And really what we do is help set up business-to-business meetings with our sellers and those buyers. And it wasn't just from Panama, but from Central America. So we brought buyers in from the region. Central America is a region with a lot of opportunity for U.S. food and ag exports. Last year, we exported $8.8 billion worth of food and agricultural products. Panama actually became, for the first time ever, a $1 billion market for U.S. food and ag exports. So there's a lot of opportunity. There's close cultural ties, a close value system. They know the U.S. brand. They like the U.S. brand. And so it really helps open that door to building those long-term trading relationships for our producers and exporters.
Mm-hmm. Of course, the COVID-19 pandemic put a huge pause on activities like this. That kind of mix of government and private sector sanctioned travel had to pause for a bit. But anywhere in particular that I have to imagine you have a nice long list of places you and USDA would like to go, what does the future travel plans look like at this point?
Yeah, well, first, before I answer that, I think one of the things the COVID pandemic did show us is we can also build some of those relationships differently. USDA started virtual trade missions. Those are going to continue because I think for some, it's really daunting. For some U.S. businesses, it's daunting to get on an airplane, travel halfway around the world. That's a good way to kind of start to say, do we want to export? What does exporting look like? How do we engage with buyers? But as you said, we have a long list of places we want to go as we really are working to prioritize market diversification. So next up is the Netherlands. I will be there in 2 weeks with nearly 40 U.S. businesses. And again, we're going to bring in buyers from across the region. So bringing in folks from Iceland, Norway, Sweden, Finland, and Denmark, and then the Netherlands. This region is a $4.5 billion food and ag export market for the United States. The Netherlands has the largest seaport in Europe, and so really excited about that opportunity. Then later this summer, I'm actually going to be leading a trade mission to Japan, one of our top food and ag export markets for the United States, and a lot of high-value products really compete really well in that market with Japanese consumers. And then on deck later this year, we have Chile, Malaysia, and then Angola on deck, where we'll be leading trade missions as well.
So why these particular markets for USDA? What was the prioritization that was placed on these particular countries?
Yeah, so one, as we think about new and emerging markets, maybe where we don't have large export volumes to date, but we really see a lot of growing middle class opportunity and the opportunity to build new consumers of U.S. Food and ag products. Also, two, we look at where we have really solid a foundation and really see opportunity for growth, so that Central America, South America opportunities. And then some of our longstanding trading relationships, like Japan, I think really investing in that relationship, with the COVID pandemic, we haven't had the opportunity to invest in that trading relationship in the same way as we would have before. And so really trying to foster that that relationship is important to us. So they're multifaceted on how we look at where we're picking and where we're going. I think to Angola, we are, as an administration, really starting to focus more and more on the African continent. You know, by 2050, one in four people on the planet will live on the African continent. And so huge market opportunity, huge potential, and so something we're trying to invest and really put more focus on from the administration perspective, but also from USDA.
Mm-hmm. Undersecretary Taylor, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers, but first, our Hannah Pagel takes a look at a major trade market in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
Despite trade uncertainties and the ongoing genetically modified corn dispute, Mexico is projected to be the second biggest ag export destination for the U.S. in the 2023 fiscal year. USDA estimates the U.S. will export $28 billion worth of agricultural products to Mexico. That would represent 15% of all U.S. farm exports. This chart breaks down some of the products with their values averaged over the past 5 years. On average, Mexico's purchases of grain and animal products both top $6 billion each. The country also spent more than $3 billion in the oilseeds and horticulture categories. USDA gave multiple reasons why there will be even more products exported in the future. Those include sustained demand, trade advantages afforded by the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, and low transportation costs. For AgriPulse, I'm Hannah Pagel.
Who's replacing petroleum and asphalt? You are. Who mapped the soybean genome for better varieties? You did. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, it all comes back to your bottom line. That's you as your soy checkoff.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
It's not as simple as just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we are going to convene a discussion on the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, as well as some of the trade implications between the United States and those critical trading partners. For this discussion, joined by Jaime Castaneda with the U.S. Dairy Export Council, as well as Kane Quarles with the National Potato Council. Appreciate both of you taking the time to join us. And Jaime, I want to go to you first, because we know that, of course, the United States and Canada involved in a dairy dispute already under the USMCA, but a unsatisfactory result led to another dispute settlement process. What can you tell us about just kind of the state of play and where things are at in this current dispute process with the U.S. and Canada over its dairy policies?
Well, thanks first for the invitation. Basically, we are at a stage of we have a panel, and there's going to be the submission from the United States. And then basically, Canada will do the same, and we expect that the panel will be making a resolution by this summer.
So looking for some kind of resolution this summer on this issue, and of course, this is the second time that the U.S. and Canada have taken a crack at this issue. How does the American case differ in your mind this time around?
I think that we were able to provide additional information to USDR and the U.S. government in general to show them that the first time they aim for a very narrow decision, hoping that Canada will play fair and will come up with a decision that would provide us with the market access that they agreed to during USMCA negotiations. Unfortunately, they didn't. So USDR understood that, and with additional information from us, they have actually been able to put together a bigger case that will certainly force the hand of Canada to amplify the access that they have given us. Mm-hmm.
So, Cam, I want to bring you into the fold here because we have this the dairy dispute that we just discussed with Jaime, and of course, everyone knows well the issue that the U.S. and Mexico are having over genetically modified corn trade, and the potato industry certainly no stranger to trade industries with Mexico on its own right, and we'll talk about that here in a little bit. But I guess to just frame up the conversation, do you see this as a argument against trade agreements because we are having these issues with our trading partners anyways, or an argument for trade agreements because it is offering some kind of resolution process to these disputes?
Well, to be honest with you, I think it's a test of the agreements that we have made with our trading partners. And it's what Jaime's going through, what the dairy industry is going through. This is really fundamental to making sure that what we thought we signed up for, we're actually receiving. We're hopeful, obviously, that the dispute resolution system that's embedded within USMCA or any of these other agreements works and delivers the intended results that creates a more fair and level playing field. Without that, the agreements really aren't worth the paper that they're written on. So it's a challenge. It's obviously a huge resource consumption that for the affected industries, but it's really necessary in order to test the strength of these agreements.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Who increased sales to Egypt 700%? You did. Who's the number one protein in chicken feed? You are. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, it all comes back to your bottom line. That's you as your soy checkoff.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next farm bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. Cam Quarles with the National Potato Council says longtime efforts to gain broader access for American potatoes into the Mexican market are starting to pay dividends.
We got those positive resolutions, that positive ruling from the Mexican Supreme Court, as you noted, about 2 years ago. A year ago, we started shipping, and the volumes have been slow and steady. At this point, that market access agreement is being, there are always little issues, but broadly, it's being implemented properly. Of course, we're always looking towards the future, and we're very hopeful that the politics that created what became one of the longest disputes in USDA history those politics don't reemerge again in the future and somehow reduce or outright block our access. But what the dairy industry is going through in terms of testing dispute resolution within USMCA, I think a number of the statements that have been made by Secretary Vilsack, Ambassador Tai, they give us confidence that if for some reason we're unfairly bounced from that market in the future, the U.S. government is going to stand behind us and test these agreements and enforce the access that we for a very long time deserved and we finally received.
Let's broaden things out just from a strict Mexico focus here, Cam. As we think about the potato industry broadly and some of the things that some of the various destinations that American potatoes can be heading, where do you see as your biggest growth potential markets at this point, knowing that you do have this access, this broader access to Mexico now, other countries in the world are available as well. What do you kind of see as the biggest growth potential for U.S. potato exports?
Just to kind of frame things, in terms of fresh potato exports, Mexico is going to be about $150 to $200 million a year increase in exports. That's roughly a 10% increase in U.S. potato exports globally. So huge opportunity just in that one country. We see a mirror image of that in Japan. and Secretary Vilsack, Ambassador Tai, a number of members of Congress have been very strong in pushing forward that the Japanese have, they have a lot of internal politics with their ag industry. Those negotiations have really stalled. They've just been stymied for about 3 years now. But if we're able to get the market access in Japan that we have received in Mexico, we think another $150 to $200 million a year, huge opportunities for the U.S. potato growers in terms of international markets.
International market growth, obviously such a huge factor for potatoes and dairy producers, but also American agriculture as a whole. And that's kind of the subject I want to bring back to you, Jaime, as we wrap up our conversation. There's been a fair amount of criticism lobbed at the Biden administration amongst some agricultural lawmakers and a broader sector of lawmakers in general, saying that the Biden administration really hasn't been doing enough in terms of market access and offering up new opportunities for American exports generally and agriculture specifically. Based on the conversations you've had with the administration and the things that you've seen around the world, is that a fair criticism?
I think that the fair criticism is the fact that what we have said to Ambassador Tai is that we don't have a problem with the perspective of a worker-focused trade policy. We believe farmers are workers. We have farm workers, we have owners, we have processing facilities, we have the entire work focus. So for what we don't understand is that why we cannot do this everything together. Why can we not pursue a trade agreement with a worker focus? So. Europe does it all the time. Europe actually have trade agreements that make us actually be at a disadvantage. So I think the criticism is primarily as to why can we not do both?
Very good. Well, a number of issues to watch on the global trade front, and certainly trade so important to American agriculture and its various commodities. I'm Ian Cam. Thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse newsmakers, but first, our Lydia Johnson takes a look at a Farm Bill title certain to garner plenty of attention in this week's Farm Bill Focus.
The largest part of the Farm Bill pie is the fourth title, Nutrition. This title provides assistance for low-income households through programs including the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program and Emergency Food Assistance Programs. The title also includes assistance for low-income consumers to buy fruits and vegetables. The latest baseline from the Congressional Budget Office shows the nutrition title is expected to receive more than $1.2 trillion of funding in the next Farm Bill, which is more than 80% of the total mandatory funding. There is already a heated debate about the amount of funding the SNAP benefit program will receive in the next Farm Bill. House Ag Republican Dusty Johnson of South Dakota has introduced a bill to toughen existing SNAP work requirements. Democrats, including House Ag Ranking Member David Scott, have criticized Johnson's bill and have also vowed to oppose cuts to the program. SNAP is also facing changes in May when the end of the COVID-19 public health emergency will also bring an end to SNAP emergency allotments. Work requirements that have been suspended since the beginning of the pandemic will also kick back in. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson.
Register now for the 2023 AgriPulse Food and Ag Issue Summit in California. The event will offer participants a full day of presentations and panel discussions. You can hear from members of the California Legislature, food and agriculture leaders, along with industry experts and academics. The summit takes place on June 5th at the Sheraton Grand Sacramento and through our virtual experience. View the latest information and register today under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. The next Consumer Price Index will be released on Wednesday. That's also the day USDA will release its annual report on hatchery production. And finally, the House Ag Committee will host a Farm Bill listening session Friday in Binghamton, New York. We'll keep our eyes on all of this and more at AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one. Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.